Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Well, hello and welcome. I'm Morgana, and...
And I'm Devin.
To let you know a little bit about us before we dive into today's topic, which is the truth about Kabbalah, soulmates, and twin flames. Our background is we've both been, long before we met each other, love and relationship coaches. I have been a professional coach for over 25 years, best-selling author, best known for taking relationship coaching to relationship with money, as if money were a hot, beautiful, wonderful lover who never wants to leave you. Devin has had his own journey, and we're really going to be focusing on Devin's expertise. Do you want to take over here?
No, you were doing great, actually. I wish I had my resume at the tip of my tongue. I never quite do. But for starters, I've been the editor-in-chief of In the No Traveler for the last 16 years, and also have done relationship coaching for the last 5. And very much into love and relationships, obviously, by the name of our show, as well as have been studying the Western mysteries, Kabbalah, and lots of other fun, interesting, esoteric things for probably the last 25, 30 years. And I guess that's what my wife's hope is that we will be discussing those giant quandaries in a single hour.
Yeah, we had a discussion before today's episode. Apparently, I volunteered a very large topic, which is maybe too much for 1 hour, but we will come back to it. And we also do want to make time for people calling in with questions about soulmates and love and relationships. So, Devin, can you tell us a little bit about Kabbalah, soulmates, and twin flames?
Not in a sentence. And before we get started, I just wanted to acknowledge about 10 days ago, my brother passed unexpectedly, and that's been sort of a major part of my life. It was a wonderful and yet, like most families, a complicated relationship, and it was something that was very challenging. It was not coronavirus related at all. It was just something that sort of happened out of the blue. The story that I got from my sister was that he went to get out to fix a cable or something like that, and he just didn't get up. And so I think, you know, it's one of those things that's really a crystallization for me that the life that we want to lead is right now. It's the thing that's in front of us. And I suppose that's probably why I'm as passionate about things like Kabbalah, because, you know, it's very much about getting beneath the surface, in order to kind of find the things that are meaningful now. It's a very deep and involved subject. So anyway, before I move on, I guess I just wanted to say that I'm gonna miss my brother. I'm going to miss his charm and his warmth and his ability to be really present. He was one of those people that if he was in the room with you, you felt like you were the only person in the room. And he had just this wonderful quality of making you feel important and relevant. And so I love that about him. And I get, I'm sure, you know, anybody listening to this has probably gone through similar things. And, you know, I was told a very long time ago that we honor those we love by leading a good life. And I think that's kind of what this show is all about, is that we're here to lead our best life. And I think that we do that through love. And as I'm certain I will say this many times over, is that love is an action, and that action is service. I've got that from a friend of mine, Dave Marciano. I really believe that. And so I guess are we ready to talk about soulmates?
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So I come from a place of the Western mysteries, Hermeticism, and traditional Kabbalah. And so a lot of what I'm going to be saying now is it comes from a variety of sources. I wish I could say I invented it. I did not. And it's a lot of an interpretation, based upon books I've read and things that I've studied. And so I'm going to give you my best understanding with the caveat that there may be somebody else out there who considers themselves to be a supreme expert. I personally consider myself more of a student, and I think I'm passionate about it because it's enriched my life so many ways. But in a nutshell, if I were to condense this into the smallest thing, and I should say that my wife is right, when she said, oh, we're gonna do an episode on soulmates, I was like, are you kidding me? Because it's not a small subject. Like, and I'm going to try to keep it, as simple as possible. But from my understanding, we could be talking for a really, really long time, and I don't want to punish anybody with that. So I'm going to try to condense it as quickly as possible in a meaningful way. In a nutshell, soulmates is the idea that as we come down as a soul, we are split in two, man and woman. And yes, there is some debate whether or not that could be man and man or woman and woman or some other, combination of fluidity, right? That's not what this is about. But it comes down in a pair, in two different, human incarnations. And the idea is, and this is what I've heard from many people who are always looking for their soulmate. They want their soulmate because there's this notion inside of them that if they find their soulmate, problems will disappear, that life will have nothing but rich meaning and a tapestry of love will fill the air. And by the way, that is great. We love that idea. And like everything else, it doesn't necessarily manifest easily or that simply. I think, so I'll do my best to kind of explain it. I'll come from a perspective of what's called Lurianic Kabbalah, who is a sage from 500 years ago or so. And so the idea is that we are a bunch of different little sparks. In other words, each spark of us, most of us would say, well, but I'm me, and so I have a soul. And that's part of the equation. The larger Kabbalistic understanding is actually we're like a splinter. We are a spark of a soul. We are part of the pieces, and we are many parts of pieces. So the idea here would be I have what would be sort of like the perfect soulmate out there. Maybe it's my wife. She may very well be sitting next to me. I'm, for the sake of argument, going to say that, in fact, she is my pure soulmate. But we're going to pretend that there's a person X out there, and person X also has a soulmate, or she has a soulmate. It doesn't matter. Person X has a soulmate. And there is this one sort of divine soulmate. So first, to tackle the question of, well, if I get my soulmate, won't everything just be hunky-dory? Won't it just be this sort of like, everything will just be fulfilled, and I will only feel love, and all my problems will disappear because I have this soulmate, and we'll just hold hands, and we'll make love on a veranda, and we'll do all the soulmatey things that I have dancing around in my brain. So, in general, the idea is that you will actually experience a measure of strife. Well, why is that? Okay, so the big question is where do the ideas of soulmates come from? How does this all apply, right? And I promise you, we're going to get to the fun stuff shortly, but just to kind of set the stage, that all of our little sparks of soul go back all the way to Adam and Eve. So really, it's sort of like a symbolic notion that we are all interconnected. And I believe that to be true. In other words, the things that I do here, whether they directly or indirectly are recognized by you, I think all of our goodwill together creates a better world for everybody else. So that's a good thing. And then in terms of the soulmates, you know, you can think of just in terms of the math about the amount of human beings who have come, you know, whether or not you are part of the, you know, whether or not you believe in the Adam and Eve story or whether it's total myth of you, we could still probably all agree on that at some point we're all interconnected. And so we'll call these sparks. These sparks are also interconnected, but in different ways. In other words, some sparks are sort of like on one side of the world and some other sparks are on the other. And that's part of geography. But in terms of Kabbalah, they're also, it's that same idea. If you go back to Adam and Eve, there was sort of like these 613 things that needed to be done, these goals that would allow us to stay, to raise our elevation of humanity, et cetera, et cetera. And that was failed in the garden, right? That's the story. And then over time, as we have grown in civilization, we still have these 613 limbs, right? And so you can look at it as a tree. And these 613 limbs of the tree all have their different sparks of soul. In other words, they have their different purposes, their different goals. And so the more finely tuned sparks, if you will, are going to be more collected together. Those collected sparks are probably going to manifest, and probably one of the best ways I can describe it is that, and I might have even mentioned this last week, there was a dear friend of mine who was at the bank, and he wasn't planning anything, he wasn't doing anything other than going to the bank and doing whatever banking he had, and he turned around, and there was this woman, and there was this quiet moment in the back of his mind. And it said quite loudly, "That's your wife." Anyway, I think they've been together, you know, 15 or 16 years, quite a while. They are married. They are in love. They have two beautiful children. And sometimes it's that. Sometimes we have those little moments, those little lightning bolts that go, "Oh, that's your person." Now, can I say that that's his exact soulmate? I don't know. What I can say is that's part of like his specific tribe, his group of splinter souls that need to be going in the same direction together. And that we could certainly say that in terms of like how we live our lives, that some of those splinters are going to be like, well, they have my kind of common history, and they have sort of like my outlook on life, and they have the way that we can live together. Like those are all part of the qualities of the sparks that will attract us, right? Like we don't necessarily have to see somebody from a crowded room and go, oh my gosh, wow. But we are going to have some moments where we're going to be talking to somebody and all of a sudden there's going to be a familiarity. There's going to be sort of like a connectivity. There's going to be some sort of a thing, right, that we're just attracted to, right? It doesn't have to be sort of like an objective like, wow, that is the most attractive person ever. It means that this is an incredibly attractive person to you. Right? Maybe it's going to manifest into romantic love, and maybe it won't. But really what we're getting at is that there's this other person, right? That's sort of like the soulmate. But if I were to give you sort of like, if you're at home going, oh my gosh, how am I going to meet my soulmate? There's 7 billion people running around on the planet. Well, what I would suggest to you is that, you know, in understanding that soulmate sensibility is that if you believe that the universe has a certain order to it, you can believe that there is a certain order to you meeting and finding and discovering and experiencing your soulmate. I would probably argue, and I think a lot of people who've studied this subject with any depth would also say that if you've had a real meaningful relationship, like it wasn't a fling, it wasn't a one-night stand. If you had some sort of a meaningful, like, I love this person, even to the point, like, I don't even understand this person, but I am attracted, I need to be around them, there's probably some of that stuff going on. So how are we doing? Does that make sense?
Yeah, but so it sounds like you can have a lot of soulmates. And how does that relate to the idea of a twin flame?
Well, I think the twin flame falls into that same kind of, you know, to me, it's a synonym of the same sort of idea. In other words, these sort of sparks that is your spark. And I, you know, even in Kabbalah, they would say, oh, yeah, there's one definite spark that's your particular spark. Right. And that would be sort of like the ultimate goal. That would be the perfection. And isn't that wonderful? Right. And I would say that we all cross our fingers to get that. But really what that's stating is that if you're together with that perfect spark, that means that you have the ability to create the most light together. Please note that I'm not saying easy. I'm not saying simple. I'm not saying happy. I'm not saying comfortable. I'm not saying, you can look at it this way, is that if you were standing at a Y in the crossroads, on one side would just be chocolate and birds would be chirping and it would be wonderful and magical and delicious for sure. And on the other side, it would just be broccoli and it would be steamed. And it would have no sauce. We can intellectually agree that maybe the broccoli would be the direction we want to go or that we should go, but wow, that chocolate is a powerful call. And so that means that in our lives that we may be attracted to soulmates, we may be attracted in a certain circumstance in a situation, but if we actually get that soulmate, it's you can expect it to be more like broccoli than it would be like chocolate. Again, we can appreciate the broccoli. We can want the broccoli. We can know in our hearts that the broccoli is what we need. But it is it's more than just simply like, oh, I'm swimming in chocolate, like in Willy Wonka, when the German kid falls in the river of chocolate and then gets sucked up in the tube, who knows what happens to him. That's kind of what we're after. In other words, we're looking for this calling of I'm moving towards the broccoli rather than the chocolate. That doesn't mean we can't have fun. That doesn't mean it's not impossible. What it means is there's a certain measure of what's the responsibility of you within the confines of this sort of like higher relationship? Because most people that I speak to, they have more of a fairy princess castle type of sensibility.
Yeah.
Right. Who doesn't want that?
Okay. So what is the Kabbalist, because I'm cheating, I've heard you teach this before and I love this. So from the perspective of Kabbalah, why bother falling in love? Why do we fall in love?
Well, because I think we fall in love ultimately to be of service. I mean, I would argue that, you know, part of what's happening is we find this attraction, right? And let's say we're just sort of like in the dating phase of things. We're in the dating phase of things and then this other person and all of a sudden, wow, I like the cut of their jib or something like that, right? They're attractive.
What is a jib?
I don't know, actually. Okay. It's just some old 1923 skidoo term.
Okay.
So there is this, you see this other person on the other side of the room and there's a part of you that just goes, wow, I want to know that person. I want them to come over here and talk to me. I want to go over and talk to them. There's this compulsion, right? And then somehow we meet up, we start talking, and there's like, oh, wow, I want more of this thing. And maybe it's sort of like a sexual chemistry, or maybe it's this other thing, but we want that person around us, right? Like I've had friends, obviously they're just not romantic, but people that I've had in my life, like since, you know, second grade, since kindergarten, people, I just had a lengthy conversation with a buddy of mine who I've quite literally known since we were two. Long time relationship. And this guy has always been part of my life and we always have incredible conversations. And so I would say he's not necessarily a soulmate in the romantic way, but this is one of those guys that's going to be part of my world forever. And that's just what it is. And because I think we have that sort of like we're in the same tuning of the spark, the same branch.
I want to go back to twin flames because there's like a whole industry built around finding your twin flames, and you can only have one. And if you don't find your twin flame in this lifetime, are you doomed to loneliness? Are you doomed to unsatisfying love? What's the story there?
Okay, so again, I'm going to give you a Kabbalistic answer, and then I'm going to give you sort of like my interpretation of it, is that for each one of these 600 things that we went back to, right?
That's 600 what?
613. They're called mitzvot, but they're sort of like the goals, the missions that were intended to be conquered by Adam and Eve. It was this idea that each one of us now kind of has like the goal of focusing on one of these things, like one special thing that we need to kind of go out there into the world to elevate humanity. Right. What was your question again? I want to make sure.
If you don't meet your twin flame, are you doomed to loneliness? Do you only get one shot?
Yeah, no, that's ridiculous. Okay, so you can look at it this way: is that we're playing a game, like all of us together. We're playing the world's largest jigsaw puzzle. Right? There's billions upon billions of these jigsaw puzzle pieces. The important thing to understand is that just because it's a jigsaw puzzle, that doesn't necessarily mean that only one piece matches your own. Actually, what it is, again, Kabbalistic understanding, is that there's actually like 613 different types of puzzle pieces. So that means of the quite many billions of pieces, there are many, many, many pieces that will match up perfectly to yours. It may tell a slightly different picture. It may not necessarily reveal all the possible light in the universe in a particular moment. What it means is that you can have happiness, you can have love, you can have creativity, you can get through problems together. I would say that some of those problems for most of us in their 20s are going to look very different than they will in midlife. I would say that if you're going to be finding and searching for a partner now, if you are single, that, by the way, you should totally have hope. And what's our number? Is that 888-627-6008? That sounds right?
Yeah, you can call in if you have questions. 888-627-6008.
Right.
This leads to a question that was submitted before the show from someone I know personally. What if you lost the love of your life? Can you find love again?
Yeah, you can. And I think, part of the soulmates question, you know, people are going to ask, well, what if we show up at different times? And that's possible. And what if we show up and we never meet? There's a lot of these sort of like what if kinds of questions. Again, we're dealing with sort of like 613 kinds of puzzle pieces. And some of those puzzle pieces are going to be an absolute perfect match for you. There may be many of them. I think part of what it is that you get to make – part of what we've been given is free will. We get to choose to make decisions on our own behalf. I think – what do we do? I think when relationships either fail – or somebody dies on us or something like that, I still believe that it starts becoming, how do we honor those we love? We do that by leading a good life. So I think what we do is, like for my brother as an example, what did I do? I went through old pictures. I spoke to his family. I told them that I love them. I found my favorite picture of my brother, my sister, and I, and I put it in a frame, and I put it in our living room because I want to honor him. And at the same time, even though it's going to be painful, I want to collect up the memories I have of him. And I'm personally going to do some more writing. I've already done some. And I'm then going to go out into the world and be part of it as best I can. That doesn't mean I don't mourn. That doesn't mean I don't feel badly. What it means is I take the time that I need. And then I realize that I have the capacity, if I choose so, to go out into the world and put myself out there. One of the suggestions that is sort of common, at least in Kabbalistic terms, is that when you start thinking about, oh, I want my soulmate, as an example, you start thinking about it. You start getting that into your consciousness. Oh, that there is there is not only is there a person, but there are people that are right for me that will be useful in not only my future, but in sort of like the future of all humanity. I know we're getting a little bit woo-woo out there.
I like it.
Good. All right. Well, we're still going. I didn't say I was stopping. I didn't say I was stopping. We're still moving forward. And then what you do is quite literally, however it is that you pray or reach out on some sort of a spiritual level to go, okay, I'm ready for this thing. But I would also argue you're not necessarily arguing or praying for a person. What you're really praying for is the capacity to have understanding of what that relationship is. In other words, you're looking at it as sort of like a sacred connection to the universe rather than I want somebody to show up and give me flowers, right? Or that doesn't mean you shouldn't get flowers, because my wife was giving me some very special looks. It doesn't mean you shouldn't get things, and it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be courted, and it doesn't mean you shouldn't feel loved. What it means is that the relationship has this sort of like fun quality, right? Make love on the veranda. And then it should have this sort of like measure of like, I have a responsibility, I have a duty to what that relationship is, right? If I believe I'm with my soulmate, my one soulmate out of these 7 billion people, I should also have the capacity and the willingness to honor that relationship as being sacred and important and meaningful and still make love on the veranda.
So you're talking about we have all these choices, and then there's the idea in Kabbalah that there's the two, the split soul in two.
Right.
Would a twin flame be different than just a family member of the family of sparks? How would we know? Would we know?
Well, I think maybe I'm saying something horrible right now.
Uh-oh.
I might. I don't mean to, but I might. I would argue that there is a business to be made of like, well, but I'm gonna tell you how to get exactly your soulmate, and I'm gonna have you drink a potion or whatever it is. I'm gonna give you some of these details, and maybe they're very well intentioned. I think one of the joys of life is that we don't ever have like total, complete, 100% certainty. I think what we get is what we get. We get our lives. We get these opportunities in them. Sometimes our lives are filled with cash, and for most of us, it's going to be sort of up and down, right? And so there's going to be just we get to choose how we view the world, and we get to take action. I don't know if we get to have burning bush moments about our relationship. I would actually say that it's not really about like I must have my twin flame. I think it's much more about I want to have a relationship where I can reveal good in the world, that I can use this other person to create harmony, not only for the two of us, but that would be a great place to start, but for like the bigger picture. How do we go out in the world and be and do good things and elevate the consciousness of anybody who crosses our path, right? Now, of course, we're not all mystics and we're not all gurus. But that would be sort of like a goal that we may want to have in the back of our minds, that when we do turn around at the bank and go, oh, wow, wait, there's something else going on here. We need to go check out that thing.
You didn't have that reaction to me on our first date.
Well, so I guess what you're saying is I am digging a hole for myself.
No, I didn't have that reaction to you either. But I felt like I could be myself. Like I didn't have to put on a show. So there was definitely that kind of kinship where we were able to speak together for 6 hours. And I never felt like I had to impress you.
Right. And
I felt safe.
Well, and you didn't. And I would say that those kinds of things are important to consider, because really, you know, maybe people are, you know, like, I think what a lot of people do in society, and this is, we're kind of deviating from the conversation at hand right now, but I think what a lot of people do is they think, well, I'll date for a while, right? And I won't have any objective goals. I'll date and I'll feel it out and I'll feel what dating feels like. And then it'll be, well, maybe I'll go steady and we'll feel what that looks like. And I don't have to have any goals. I will just date and I'll see what it feels like. And then I'll, you know, maybe we'll cohabitate and that'll feel like something. And then at, you know, at the brass ring would be like, I'm in this committed relationship and maybe I'm married or some variation of committed, right? I don't know if that's a useful model for what most people do. I think if you're looking for a long-term relationship, that should be in the back of your mind anytime you go out, because that's really what you're doing is you're auditioning for a long-term spouse. Now, if you don't want those things, that's fine.
Who are you talking to? What mystical person is not looking for that who'd be listening to this show?
I don't know. you never know. But I think there's a lot of people that are not doing that. I think there's a lot of people, especially if you're younger, I think there's this idea that, oh, I need to sow oats and I need to be doing other things. And I should not be focusing on a relationship as being important. Like, I should get my work thing together first, and then maybe I can date. Or, you know, I need to get X, Y, and Z in order before I can start thinking about big picture ideas in terms of love and romantic relationships.
That's why it's so nice being midlife. We've already right? done all yeah. the crazy stuff.
We don't have to. Yeah. We don't have to do all that kind of stuff. And so, obviously, I guess part of these things is that, you know, in terms of finding this person, you want to find somebody who's in a similar stage of life that you are in terms of they're actually looking for a relationship. I don't know if somebody shows up with a wedding dress on date number three and think that's a selling point. But I think what you do is
Was I moving a little too fast?
Well, you were faster than me. And just to answer your question, like, I felt comfortable with you. I felt love with you. I felt lots of positive things. Like, I just kept thinking, okay, we'll just keep going with this. Mm-hmm. Right. And I also had to have, I did, I spoke to people who were like, because it's very easy to point out all of our apprehensions. Like, that's the easiest thing in the world to do. Right. Oh, well, you know, I don't know. There's a whatever. Something. I don't know. I don't like the way they put their hair over their ears. So I'm out of here. Right. We do nonsensical things like that. So, you know, what I started doing ages ago is I started quite literally enlisting the help of other people who would say, hey, I'm thinking about, you know, she puts her hair over her ear. I don't know if that does it for me. And that person listening could say, yeah, that just sounds like nonsense. Why don't you come up with a really great reason of why a relationship shouldn't work before you get out of it. And so I knew sort of going in sort of like our dating, that I had more of a committee of people who are willing to say, why don't you hold your horses a little while longer? Why don't you let things unfold the way they should? And then, of course, at some point it became, you know, abundantly obvious to me that we were a good match and we're headed for the long-term thing.
So here's something that has shown up in our wedding vows that I think is really important to address why you created that originally for our wedding vows is being nice to each other when we want to kill each other.
I'm sorry, phrase that again?
Use it when, since we're talking about Kabbalah and what Kabbalah teaches about soulmates and twin flames, why did you bring up in our wedding vows the vow to be nice to each other even when we want to kill each other?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it goes back to this idea that the relationship isn't just about my convenience. It's not about just me being happy and you doing things that I can go, oh, look, she did all these things for me, so now I'm in a relationship, right? It wasn't about me being convinced. It was about the two-way street. Like, I've talked to so many young people about this very subject, and I've heard them, like, want to break up with people over ridiculous things. And, of course, my response is, well, hold your horses, as I've been told to hold my horses. My responsibility is to the relationship, to hold it as sacred, like, right? I'm not a single person. That means I've chosen you as being my person. That's the number one thing. And I can't allow that to kind of go off the tracks, because then it will go off the tracks. So that's not the goal, right? The goal is to have these long-term relationships. And there is a but that I'm going to save for a couple minutes. But the goal is to keep maintaining the relationship as being as sacred, because that's what it is. So that's why I included that in our vows multiple times, is because just because I'm having a feeling doesn't mean that I should all of a sudden now say, well, now I've earned the right to say that the relationship isn't good. What I hear a lot, because I almost went over it, was that I hear a lot of people say, particularly young people, well, I want 50-50 in the relationship. And I would argue that never is a thing, because some days somebody wakes up and something terrible happens and they have nothing to give. So guess what? If you're in the committed relationship, for that moment, you give the 100%. You help carry that person through that bad thing. Now, let's say there's other outstanding, awful things that are within the relationship that really aren't tolerable. We're not talking about that. We're talking about you annoy me and you've gotten on my nerves and you're a drag and you said a not nice thing and I could hear it in your voice. And, you know, that's not to me breakup. Now, maybe if that goes on perpetually and you've tried to discuss it in reasonable ways, and maybe you sought therapy or outside help to try to clean up to improve the quality of the relationship, then we may be talking about something else. But if we're just simply talking about, you know, I think we also have the ability, again, this is what people have told me, they take a problem and then they use giant, massive words to make it, give it weight. And you know, somebody's not all that nice one morning, or they have bad breath, but it's the worst breath in the whole world. I can't tolerate this breath any longer. I have to move on away from this bad. Your halitotic blast is too much for me to bear. So again, what we're talking about, and we're talking about, again, we're talking about people who are looking for marriage and may have found the right person, the right puzzle piece to paint their picture, their good match. So that's the consciousness. So I'm not talking about sort of like, hey, I'm just casually dating. I want to think about weddings and wedding dresses or long-term commitments. That's fine. Have a great time until that strikes you, and maybe it won't.
Well, interestingly, on our second date, I asked, because I knew that I was in my mid-40s already, and I had never been married, and I wanted to be. That was like the entirety of my bucket list is, I've done everything else I want to do. I want to be happily married. And I shared with you that that was really what I was looking for long-term. I didn't know if it was you, but that was where I was headed. And you said that you didn't believe in marriage.
I didn't believe in because it's, again, you know, for me, everything is a little complicated. I'm sure some of you will figure that out. It's a lot of thinking. It's a lot of consideration. I believed in the unity of two people. I didn't necessarily need the validation of a marriage certificate, right? In other words, something that would be legal, provided by the government. Like that, I still think is like, I don't care what the United States, as an example, has to say about my love life, right? That doesn't mean a lot to me. What does mean a lot to me is the commitment that you and I share. That, for me, is the basis of everything that we're discussing, right? That's why getting married by a tree or a stranger on the side of the road still has meaning and import.
By the way, we've had both of those weddings.
That's right. And so so they're meaningful to us because the relationship has meaning, because the vows to each other have meaning. It's not necessarily some bureaucracy somewhere saying, well, now I've sanctified you and here's your rubber stamp. So that must mean something.
So If you have a question about your own love life, your own relationship, wanting to know if it is a soulmate or a twin flame, or if you're feeling challenged, wondering if you should stay, you can call 888-627-6008. And until then, I'm going to keep asking questions. So how do you recognize if somebody is a soulmate?
Well, again, you know, I think I've kind of described that a little bit earlier. I mean, I think it's a natural inclination. However, one of the things that I heard that was quite interesting, and I've seen this play out in other people's lives, and, you know, I don't know if you guys can hear it, but since we are sequestered in our home, the gardener is here with one of those blowing contraptions doing something. So one of the ways that I've heard is that you can recognize the person by how annoyed you are by them. In other words, they walk into the room, not do they just like turn around and go, oh my gosh, that's my wife. You actually get the opposite reaction is, oh my gosh, I hate that person. And there is no rhyme or reason for it. And then all of a sudden, you find yourself like trapped in an elevator with this person that you can't stand for no apparent reason. Like everything that they say to you is like nails on a chalkboard. Like you can't wait to argue with them and you can't stand them. And then that, quite literally, I've heard this story multiple times, but some other friends, quite literally, there was this guy, he turned around, he goes, oh, that's my wife. And she saw him and like, I hate him. I don't know who is this guy. I wish he would go away. And apparently he was dating like her roommate. And so this guy kept showing up and he was like, well, I'm going to break up with this girl, but now I can't because the roommate is my wife. And so he kept showing up and she was like, why don't you break up with this guy? And the roommate was like, I don't know. I just like having him around. And so it's one of those things where all the puzzle pieces sort of like work in harmony. And so that couple ended up together for you know, again, three kids. We're together for 25, 26 years. And so here was the part that I wanted to get to is that even soulmates, this is one of those kinds of things. There's something called in Judaism, there's something called a get, and it's basically equivalent to a divorce. And really what it outlines is that it says, hey, we've kind of fulfilled our karmic obligation together. We believe we've done the thing that we needed to do together, and we sign this thing to release the other soul to go off and do whatever it is that they have next on their list. And this is considered a good thing. So it's not that divorce is that terrible idea. I mean, it does because there's money and there's other things, there's other implications other than hurt and sorry feelings.
There's grieving, there's the death of the dream.
All of those things. All of those things. But a lot of it, you know, a lot of the things that I've taken away from Kabbalah that I think are so useful is that when you start diving into it, it really is about reframing the way we sort of like our gut reaction to thing. Like my gut reaction is when you break up, it's like, oh, that's the worst thing ever. Right. And I'm not saying it shouldn't be. Right. There should be mourning. There should be grief. There should be these other things. But at the same time, the reframing is about, okay, the bigger picture here is that my soul moves forward, right? It keeps doing more things. It keeps remaining productive, right? Like I go through the breakup, I go through my grief, and then I make sure that I go out and still, you know, remain with the idea that I should be in a relationship creating greater vibrations for the common good.
How do you find your soulmate? And you took some very specific actions to find me.
Well, you know, what I did was I made a pact with myself or God or the cosmic ooze or whatever. And you don't have to believe in these things. But the pact was really sort of like, okay, I believe that I'm in a good place to be a romantic partner. I'm in a good place to be in love. I felt like I knew myself well enough. Like I understand sort of like my own misgivings, my imperfections. Like I thought I could keep those things to a minimum within a relationship and still be sort of like a loving, reasonable person, right? And so that was the pact. And then, and I think we talked about this last time, is that I put myself online not because I had an expectation of finding somebody online. It wasn't about finding somebody online. It was about I'm putting it out there to the universe that I'm prepared, that I want to have. I want to be in a relationship that's going to be long lasting, that is going to be, you know, mutually beneficial. Like I had to think about, you know, what was I going to be bringing to the relationship rather than, again, this kind of goes back to what I hear from a lot of other people, is a long list of things that if they get all these things, then they're willing to be in the relationship without ever once acknowledging, well, okay, so great, you want the tall, dark, and handsome, the guy who makes $1 million a year, who has a sports car and a yacht and a private island and all of these wonderful things. And this is, by the way, this is also the same, you know, like I kind of gave like a list of kind of traditionally women aspired things, but there's also, you know, men, heterosexual and gay, all have their sort of like their list of here's my things that I
deserve.
Must
look great in jeans, but can turn it on for the night and is low drama. And I can go through the whole checklist.
Right. There's extensive lists for any human being that you're ever going to talk about. And very seldom do you ever hear somebody say, well, here's what I'm bringing to the list. Here's what I'm bringing. Here's what I want, or here's what I'm bringing in order to get this endlessly perfect person who's going to fulfill my every whim. Right? And so I find it sort of like I understand it because I've been there, but on sort of like that emotional, intuitive level, I also understand that, well, there it's all at a cost. Like even this beautiful, perfect person is still, you're going to still have to deal with them, their baggage, their history, their nonsense. And so you have to be willing to show up not only with your good stuff, but you have to show up with the stuff that's like, okay, that means I have to caretake and navigate this other person's feelings and wants and needs and imperfections, all of that stuff. It's very doable, though. It's doable, but it's a mindset.
Well, I think it's easier at our age than when we were younger.
Right. I think you're a little bit crazier when you're younger. I mean, I do have strong hope. Like my daughter's 20 and I think she's further along than where I was. And maybe that's because she's female and maybe whatever, but she's got like a good head on her shoulders. And I think, you know, at some point she's going to get out of sort of like the fog of being 20 and she'll be much more mindful as a person.
So, because I eavesdropped back when you were teaching your class, Mystical Solutions to Modern Love, about Kabbalah and love, and you kind of sell yourself short because you've been coaching people on love and Kabbalah for over 20 years.
Well, that's true.
But one of my favorite things, one of the reasons I decided to come up with this topic and throw it at you, is what you said about the purpose of love via Kabbalah, which I was fishing for earlier, but since you didn't give it, I'm going to feed it to you now, which is we fall in love to get closer to God.
Oh, yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Well, yeah. In other words, it kind of goes back to the fork in the road and the land of chocolate versus the land of broccoli.
Yeah, I was a little confused about that.
Okay, sorry about that. So we're going to come back. We're going to circle back to the chocolate and broccoli thing, is that more often than not, we're going to be lured by some sort of an external force, right? And at some point, all of the things that happen in our lives are going to be about this decision. They're going to be more challenging decisions, and they're not necessarily going to look like decisions, but we're going to have these challenges. And really, what the challenge is going to come to is, do I align myself with God, the divine, the cosmic ooze, my deepest higher self that I, you know, use a capital S for? It doesn't matter how you define that thing. But it's not sort of like the lowercase s that just wants to feel good and have a great time and just enjoy my life. So I think at some point, most of our decisions are going to be about, well, you know, like I will use the word God. I'll go with that thing. I believe that there's like I think when you play out the argument, we start getting into either God is everything or God is nothing. And you can pick your poison, right? There's upsides and downsides to whatever that is. You can just say, well, we're all happenstance on this floating sphere of no reason, and I'm going to go be a hedonist and enjoy myself. Great. Big thumbs up to that. You're entitled to that. That's the joy of free will. If you don't believe that, if you actually believe we're part of some sort of there's some sort of creative intelligence, and I don't know what it is, and I don't need to define it, it's this thing, then I have the choice of I'm going to align myself with that thing and act as if my relationship with the invisible person in the clouds has meaning or it doesn't. If it does, then somebody like myself will attempt, right? I can't say that I'm great at it. I will attempt to keep aligning to that thing, right? That unknowable force that keeps all of these things going and moving in order versus I want to make my life about chocolate.
Okay, so what does that have to do with you're really annoyed with your life partner right now?
I'm not sure if I'm following that.
So what does dealing with the ridiculousness of cohabitating with another human being, which I think is just astonishing that the human race has survived this long because it's so outrageous. You're not like me. So what is like dealing with just the difficulty of living with another person, having a relationship with another person who is different? What does that have to do with getting close to God?
Well, because we don't have burning bushes. What we have is we have each other. In this manifestation, like we get to pray and we get to meditate, and maybe we'll have conversations about that at some other show. But what we have is each other, for sure. If I believe that there was this, you know, this sort of creative intelligence out there in the universe.
That you spend all of your time studying.
Well, yeah, something like that.
Yes.
So I believe in it, right? I'm just talking as if, you know, that's not me. There's somebody else out there who's listening, who's like, I'm on the fence, or I think you're an idiot. Which, by the way, that's all good. If that's the case, though, all of a sudden you're debating this divine force. If there's this divine force, there are ideals that you probably want to keep in mind. The most basic might be, you know, don't kill a person for no reason, just for your own amusement. Don't do that. How about we just start at that point? Because if we did that, like we don't have necessarily a relationship with God or the cosmic ooze directly. I mean, we have our prayer and meditation. But if all I have is this other person, then maybe I should respect that person's life as having meaning. Even if I don't understand it, even if I don't like it, even if I don't like what it says, I get to embrace the fact that they're here. And that, you know, even if it's not my jigsaw puzzle piece, it might be somebody else's jigsaw puzzle piece. And together, those two people can create greatness. Then for me, it's important to go, okay, I'm going to give this person a pass. I don't have to fight with them or scream and yell. I don't have to prove my superiority, even though I want to do that upon occasion. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the big reasons that we are together is because you're so good at coming back to that and making it safe for me to come back to that. So that when we have those moments where it's like, who are you? How did I choose you? I think you are actually really a master at coming back to love.
Well, like I said, and honestly, it's not one of those things. Like I personally have spent an awful lot of time because I'm endlessly fascinated by what people do to find happiness, salvation, understanding God, you know, beauty in a rock, all like I love that topic, right? And I want to know all the aspects of it. So I have just a monster book collection that my lovely wife sitting next to me shakes her head and rolls her eyes every time I bring in another book.
Which is frequent.
Right, which is frequent. Actually, I've been pretty good the last
Now yeah. You're buying guitars.
Well, that's a separate story. It's okay. Only been two, and it's been like 2 and 6 months. So that's me, but that doesn't mean somebody who has a billion other interests, who does believe that there's sort of like a greater thing out there, can just say, okay, I'm going to take that thing about this greater thing notion, I'm going to put it in the back of my head, and then I'm going to go out into the world with sort of the consciousness of, oh, I'm going to go find love with this idea that this is the bigger picture, rather than I'm finding love because I want all the chocolates.
Well, my background, and I didn't bring it up earlier, but my degree is in comparative religion from Smith College. And I really, really loved Asian religion. And the path of the monk and the renunciant may look very dramatic and difficult, you know, with the robes and the ashes and no property and just living on the streets. But the idea in Hinduism and then Buddhism is that actually it is far, far more difficult to achieve enlightenment when you take the path of the layperson, the person who has a home and family, because family and love make us crazy. And that is its own path to enlightenment.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, and I think we're down to 2 minutes. Somehow we managed to talk a lot. We've almost finished an entire episode. I think that's true. I mean, because I've traveled a lot, I remember speaking to a fellow traveler who was in India, and she had a lengthy conversation with a guy whose only goal was to make a cat jump through a hoop, which is, if you think about it, horrifying. That sounds like his path to enlightenment was to make and get cats to jump through a hoop, because if he could do it, if this was his one mission, he would be connected to the divine. He would be connected to these ideas of, you know, and but if that's his only mission, that's great. But most of us don't live our lives with a loincloth on some street, you know, in Bangalore. It is going to work and having tons of people and tons of family and tons of things in our lives, which makes it more tricky. But I do believe that if you plant that seed, you can have lots more love.
Yes. So before we close, if you're listening and you want to hear more, and we definitely want to bring you into our family here, go to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. And there you can see the video of our first 11 weddings. We're up to 25 now. And also get a free gift, a download of Devin's book titled Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets for Marriage-Minded Women. So,
oh, yeah, that's a good one. I forgot
it's,
I
it's
forgot
a good
that.
One.
And 30 seconds.
And guys, if you want to hear what Devin is telling the women in your life, you can read that too. And just sign up and you'll be on the list to get an alert before our next episode, because we're not doing it every week. We're doing it every other week. So we will see you, I guess, April 30th. Devin, do you have any final words?
No, thank you all.
I want to say that,
we're probably down to 4 seconds.
We're down to 4 seconds.
See you next time.
Thank you for joining us. And if you have any questions, you can send them to us via Crazy Sexy Midlife Love and call us in the next episode. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.